Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I am Aidan Packham and we are wobbling in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it's three league games in and it's 1-1, lost one and drawn one as Leeds came to the Amex on Saturday and left with a point. We're back on the Sunday shift this week as we travel to newly promoted Coventry, who have yet to pick up a point this season. So hopefully we can get back to winning ways. Alongside myself and Alan Wares today, we welcome back Justin Brentnell. And just in case you've missed it on the last 2 weeks' shows, we're delighted to welcome back the wonderful star of stage and screen, the satirical genius, the writer and star of the forthcoming play, because it is a play called Stand or Fall. Please welcome back Mr. Mark Brailsford. Hello, Mark. Hello, Justin.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Thanks for that.
It's a play.
It's a play.
Mark, have you really had people saying, oh, is this the play of the film, of the book, of the documentary of the dog?
I had my lovely flyering team out. Some people might have seen outside the pubs and the station. Anyway, they went, oh, yeah, everyone was like, yeah, I've seen it. No. And we instructed the flyering team to say, no, that's the documentary. This is the play. This is the play. So, yeah, we've got to get that over to people that, no, you haven't seen it. It's a completely different thing altogether as a theatre show. And I can tell you all of that.
It's at the theatre. It's got actors in it. And it's exactly. Telling a story.
And there will be people
and it's got nothing to do with Barbara Windsor, despite what Hardy says. But
there will be people fluffing their lines and corpsing and breaking the fourth wall.
Never.
And
that's just me.
Because you've never done that before, have you, Mark?
I wouldn't dream.
Yeah. It's the most fun you can have with your clothes on. Anyway,
in my case,
even then, should we get back to football?
Let's get back to football. Okay, let's talk about Saturday afternoon, a very rare Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff. I don't know how many we're going to have. Actually, it's something.
Next
to do
one is as well.
It's not. Oh, the home game. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, that one is. Yes. But yeah, I don't know how many we're going to have this season. I mean, most of hopefully not as many, because the longer our European run goes on, the more games we'll have get moved to the Sunday, because we'll be action on the Thursday. But Justin, it was a bit of a funny one, really, wasn't it? I mean, it just felt the atmosphere was a little bit weird.
Yeah, I think the fans reflected the first half pretty much, and we weren't given anything to really cheer or sing about, unfortunately.
No, because I mean there was that point in the second half and it was just really weird, because it's like almost as if someone flicked a switch and turned the crowd on, because it just got kind of like really raucous, and the crowd, I think, all right, enough of this, we're going to get behind the team, and we're going to suck the ball into the net, because you're not going to kick it.
I think that's a chicken and an egg thing. What came first? But certainly after an hour, we looked back to our old selves again.
Yeah.
But for that first hour, there wasn't really much to shout about in terms of positive football.
Probably, yeah, much in terms of, like, for instance, in terms of the theatre, and Mark can back this up, it is very much a symbiotic relationship between the audience and the participants and the actors on the stage, or in our case, 22 guys on the pitch, is that, you know, Mark will say, you know, a line, or he'll do his play and he'll feel the reception. He might not necessarily get a laugh or get a reaction or something like that, but he can feel it. And obviously in that sense, you know, the football and theatre are actually sort of two sides of the same coin. So I think Justin's point here, like I say, it's symbiotic, is if the team doesn't entertain, the crowd doesn't get up. But then isn't the crowd supposed to start it first? And I think Justin's point was right. And as much as once we felt that we weren't as bad as we had been, after 60 minutes, we weren't as bad as we'd been in the first 45. And I actually would say that was as bad a performance as the second half against Palace earlier this year. It was that bad. Once they sort of woke up out of their slumbers, then the crowd reacted appropriately, and that's when you get the atmosphere.
Well, but that was it. I mean, as bad as we were, you've got to give credit to Leeds to a certain degree, because it's like that was their game plan. They pressed high, they closed down the passing lanes, and you know, and actually, I mean, obviously they went in 1-0 up, but it could have been a lot worse. I mean, Calvert-Lewin is very great, very good at leading the line, but my God, can he not shoot?
No, there's that.
Yeah,
But
he's.
sorry, you go first, Justin. I'll make a point
Yeah, he's.
afterwards.
He played the. His primary tactic is being in an offside position. So he spends a lot of the match hanging around offside, and then he manages to get himself onside at the critical point. And in doing that, he could have had a hat trick because those three chances he had a point blank header. In the first half, then he had two one-on-ones with the keeper. They're all from sort of offside positions where somehow, certainly with their goal and Cadioglo's toe, he's managed to get himself onside. But we didn't look comfortable with. I've seen Haaland do this as well, and other number nines. They hang around in an offside position the whole time, just ignore the line, and then pick their moment to sort of come back into play. And it's really difficult to defend against.
Well, this is it. I mean, all the while you're hanging around an offside, and obviously there is a difference between being in an offside position and being offside. And so when a player is in an offside position, he's largely ignored. And like I say, you time it right. To step back onside in order then just to sort of break the lines. Yeah, you're through, and it's horrific. But actually, your point, AD, about yeah, you're 100% right that Leeds had done their homework on us, but that continued in the second half. And obviously, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it in a second. There was their second goal that was, you know, half a fart offside, correctly given, but half a fart offside was. We actually started playing because they were still they maintained the same game plan, but the reason the tide turned was because we changed. There was a lot more energy. There was a lot
Yeah.
more, you know, the 50-50s, we were losing every single one in the first half, and then by sort of like, as you say, 60 minutes, we were starting to win them again. And I think for me, I don't know about what anyone else thinks. I think it was actually Yassin Ayari who picked up the midfield by the scruff of the neck. Once he started really, I mean, he was the only half decent one in the first half, and I think he really shone in the second half. Don't get me wrong, Yokoi was great when he moved out to the wide, but I thought that the midfield was driven by Ayari in a way that it should have been, and I was expecting it to be driven by Gross, who frankly didn't have one of his better games.
Well, that was the whole thing. There was too many in the first half, in particular. There was too many 4 and 5 out of 10 performances, and it was just not
That's
acceptable. And
generous.
actually, Fabian actually said after the game that we were too passive. He said there wasn't enough energy. Now, what they've been doing all week, you know, it's
But th
like.
this is it. It's about applying themselves on the match day. And the point is, they do know how to do it. You just want, I think probably Albion fans are frustrated. They want to see more of those. I mean, to do it for 90 minutes is a massive ask. However, even if you can do it for 60, 65, 70 minutes, which we largely did against Villa. Then, you know, you're getting a better performance. But to having sometimes an entire half where you see the team is flat and moribund and as you say, passive,
Yeah,
it doesn't make for a good spectacle.
but, I mean, you can argue about Mark about the personnel issue. That we still got a lot of players issue, missing, particularly at home when you want to have play on the front foot and you want someone like a Karu Mitoma in there, a Yankuba Minte, and actually having someone like Jorginho, like a moving their defence around, and also Jack Hinshfield as well. None of these players are on the pitch, and it's like they're a big miss.
Are you saying okay? Let's make this point. And actually, I'll ask Mark about this. I mean, it's not so you have to comment on
I
the
just
game
did.
necessarily, Mark. But no, I'm asking Mark here: is that are those players that AD's just mentioned there? Are they automatically ones who should be starting or should be playing a lot more compared to those who did play on Saturday?
Well, you get the impression that a lot of, because of the injuries, there's a bit of a phony war going on, really. And I think a lot of teams haven't settled down in the league generally. And Brighton's injury list is, as you said correctly, pretty extensive. So there are a few round pegs in square holes or vice versa. And I'm wondering if there's also a bit of bedding in of new players. So, for example, you know, when you've got Yalcorri, who I love, is a wonderful player. Vuskovic is brilliantly settling in. And, you know, there are injuries when they're training. So I'm guessing that they're playing in so many different places that it must be overdoing maybe a bit more of the, maybe it's overwhelming the tactical brain of a player, because it does look to me as if they had a set pattern in the friendlies particularly, And maybe that's somewhat gone out the window with the personnel changes. And that's going to happen until, I reckon, October is when we start seeing players back. You start seeing the real Albion this year, I think.
Well, I
Well,
think
we're
we're going to touch on it a little bit later anyway. But I mean, the fact that we've got the extended international break coming up, and that will give, I don't know how, but we're going to have a few people going away, aren't we? But it will give us a
hopefully
chance to
not.
bed in some of the new players, like, give like Andre an opportunity to actually properly train with the team, and Hajam, etc. There's a lot of like players that we want to see on the pitch at some point, and we're not going to be get it will be they'll be drip fed their minutes,
Yeah, there's a lot of churn, so that's a lot of players to integrate.
But it's just frustrating when
Integrate.
you're seeing that, you've got these players who are probably itching to like show what they can do, and you've got such a half-assed performance in that first half. It's just frustrating. And again, actually, and I don't want to hang him out to dry, but it's like I'm going to our player of the season last year, Ferdi Kaloglu, has not started the season brilliantly well.
Well, if you're going to take the Leeds first half as a marker, then I don't think anyone can actually come out of that with credit. So to, like you say, to hang everything on him, I think is unfortunate. Yes, he was really, really poor against Chelsea. He pulled his socks up later in the game, but by then we'd already conceded three goals, so it looks horrific. He's got a little bit of a habit at the moment, I've noticed, of trying to shepherd someone who's three times bigger than him out of play, and they just sort of stick him in his back pocket and off they go with the ball. So he's got sort of other things to learn. And sometimes when it is a player of the season, it's tempting to put them on a pedestal. We think, well, hang on, you were our hero last year. And you're letting us down. It's a bit like the ace facing Quadrophenia, you realize he's just a bellboy at the Grand Hotel. It's he will be fine again. It's
Of
just
course.
that when you're exposed in one-on-ones like that. And I think Mark's point is right, is let's say that there's the churn, and it's not to say that just because we bought a new player we've got to play them. That's old school thinking. I mean, this is about Fabian using his squad to the best advantage, and these are new players that you've actually got to get used to. I mean, most there was as we had with the show last week with Brian Owen, there's so much activity on the last 2 or 3 days of the transfer window to actually then put in even half of those players that we've bought in recently straight away, I think is suicide. So whilst there are certain regular quote first team players who are not quite up to snuff yet, that doesn't necessarily follow that those that are on the bench should be starting.
Okay. Well, I mean, the incident in question I was talking about, Justin, is probably obviously the goal, where the ball came in and Calvert-Lewin went one way, but Ferdy decided to go the other way.
I think I was kind of unlucky, really. I
I
mean, it
think he was
was.
trying to play him offside, I think, of what he's trying to do, but
Yeah, but
no.
his leg, wasn't it? What happened? The actual centre backs, I think Duncan Vukcevic had sort of moved over towards the sort of the east side of the pitch to try and get some tackles in them and block off the cross. And you had a line between Boscagli and Ayari had come back, and those two players were holding the offside line, and Kadioglu had followed. He'd been tempted to follow Dominic Calvert-Lewin on his offside odyssey, and you could see him suddenly panicking and realizing that he should be in line with Boscagli and Ayari. And at the point the ball comes over, you can see that on the match of the day still frame, you see Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and next to his boot, you see Kadioglu's little toe sticking out.
Is that his new name?
Yeah, he's Welsh. Yeah, I
Sorry,
mean that's the point. I mean, forget my home
it's once upon a
improvement.
time, the sort of like the body kind of is leaning one way, Kadioglu's leaning the other, which makes it look as though Calvert-Lewin is off. Sorry, you're getting me at it now. It's Calvert-Lewin, he's offside, boy.
I
But
didn't know he was
yeah.
Spanish.
Stop it. It's and yeah, Kadioglu sort of like looked to turn, and of course he stamped his well, he's planted his foot down as if to sort of then sort of send himself off, but it's just not in time.
The other thing I would say about Calvert Llewellyn is, and this is where the Leeds fans were booing, and I've got no sympathy with them. I mean, he was his first port of call, and he does it in a lot of games, and it absolutely baffled me as to how anyone could think he was actually going to get into the England setup for the World Cup. Is his first thought was to go for the defender every single time. And he handed off, I think, into Boscagli's face in the first 2 minutes. The referee saw it and had a word. I mean, it wasn't. And he eventually did book him after about 35 minutes. And I think it was persistent offending because he like I say, he'd done it three or four times. Now, the actual thing he got booked for in the end was no better or no worse than what he did first time. It's just he'd done it four or five times. And you could see it was persistent defending. But if he hadn't really been keeping up with what he'd been up to, you think, well, that was a bit weak. But no, it was. And I could see that apart from that, he missed, as you said, he missed a couple of sitters. And I'm not surprised he got the curly finger halfway through the second half.
Okay. I mean, it wasn't all bad in the first half. There was a couple of opportunities. One of
Oh,
which
remind
was
me.
what there was the are we calling it a half volley from Gomez? It was a rasping drive.
He spanked it anyway.
Yeah, I mean James Trafford, he's massive, isn't he? He's absolutely huge. I mean, he completely fills the goal.
He's a massive winger, I'll give him that.
It's like well, yeah, well,
We'll come
who
to that in a
knew?
minute.
But it must put you off a little bit to see like this. He's like an albatross with his arms out wide.
I
It's
think he
mad.
was the player, I think possibly he was playing for Burnley a couple of years ago, and he just absolutely stopped everything. And just,
Yeah.
I remember Attila called it, said, from New Tra Old Trafford to New Trafford. Yeah, well, he actually had an absolutely blinding game. And yes, I actually do think he's actually a pretty decent goalkeeper
Yeah.
for the most
Well,
part.
England will be needing one soon. Anyway, so we did ride our luck a little bit. Obviously, Tanaka, who was obviously Kurumatoma's school chum. And well, until this season, they both wore the number 22, so I'm guessing there must be some sort of link with that. But I mean, Tanaka did actually have the ball in the back of the net before we got going, and it was like you said, Al, it was just narrowly offside, and it really was riding our luck.
It was, but and it was also the fact that that none of the, I mean, it was actually a very well played set piece, which none of the Albion players saw. I mean, whenever we try a set piece like that, you know full well it's going to get passed, it'll end up at the corner flag. But no, they executed it brilliantly, but for that sort of like 2 inches of shoulder.
I think that's by choice, though, that when you're defending those balls into the box from a free kick, all the Leeds players are offside in that line. Then they come back onside, and then they go again. And as a group of defenders, you need to be consistent with what you're doing. So you either go with the players and try and fight for the ball, or you let them run offside effectively and hope that they really are offside and the referee blows their whistle. So you can see by the movement when the ball comes in that all the Leeds players are gunning forward, and actually the Brighton players have stopped. Now, I do take your point that it was a fraction offside, and so if we were trying to be clever there, we were a couple of centimeters away from looking very stupid. But none of the Brighton defenders were going with the Leeds players into the box. They let them run and cross their fingers that one would be offside.
I would also say that that flag went up very, very late.
They do tend to do that, though.
No, but I
They do. I
mean,
mean.
we're talking about, and I saw it on Match of the Day, the player had got to the corner celebrating, and the linesman went back 5, 10 yards, then stuck his flag up. So there must have been easily 5, 6, 7 seconds after the event that the flag went up.
Or someone in his ear telling him to put his flag up.
Possible, who knows? Don't know.
But okay. Well, I've got written down here that Bart saved from Justin. I didn't even know you were playing, Justin.
Yeah, that I can confirm that wasn't me.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought so. But it was a good save,
Yeah.
and that was the moment, actually, I think, where it all changed, and we woke up a little bit, and it was and it started. Oh God, if this would there was. Just if this was a goal, this would have been sensational. And he does tend to like a sensational goal, and that is, of course, that amazing run from Babis Kostoulas.
Oh,
And he just did,
that was Maradona-esque, and
yeah. It just
except
didn't
for the
have,
shot.
yeah. Well, I've got written down not enough egg. on here, but he if he could like just placed it a little bit further away from the goalkeeper, it's like,
And a
oh,
little bit harder,
a
yeah,
bit harder, more
more
egg.
accurate. Apart from that, it was a goal.
Um,
The
yeah.
shot was the easiest thing because he went past three players, I think, and which was extraordinary. And he just kept going after
Yeah.
getting one of the players, and then he got himself space, and he had the goal at his mercy with the keeper, and a tame shot went straight into the keeper's arms, which was a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
But before that, it looked
Oh, it was a wonderful
world
run.
class.
It was a
Yeah.
wonderful run.
But Mark, we saw glimpses of this from Babis last year, didn't we? I mean, we haven't necessarily seen the consistency that we want from him yet. But with the injuries and everything else, this is two games he started in a row, which I think is the first time he's actually done that since he's been here. I suspect he will get another opportunity at Coventry on Sunday. He is a player that really does excite me. I mean, he didn't try an overhead kick in this game, which is the first.
Oh,
But I
he's
mean,
one of
I.
my favourites. I love him. I think he's a great player. And he needs a run in the team. He needs to be playing regularly to really groove because he's always trying too hard, I think, get the
Yeah.
impression. And I think that's something in a young player that happens if they don't get a regular run at it because they're having to try and feel it. They feel they have to try and impress all the time too much. And they need to be a bit more relaxed on the timing and hence probably scuffing the shot as well after that brilliant run. So there's a lot to do with the growth of a young player and the coaching staff working with them and having a run in the team.
Absolutely. I mean, the market we put here is, and you'll all remember this, the game at Fulham last year. Right at the very end, he'd lost the ball and he tried a bit too hard, as Mark would say. He tried a bit too hard to get it back. He was not going to win the ball. He committed a foul, and from that free kick, Fulham scored their winner. And the point is that actually, just because you mucked up, don't forget. I mean, it's like they said on Ted Lasso, you're trying to be one in a million, but you forget they're actually one in 11. And there were other defenders ahead of him who could have actually sorted it out. He didn't need to correct his own mistakes. That's what your teammates are there for. And it's those kind of subtleties and nuances that as a player will grow and learn from. And I think your point absolutely right there. There's a lot of skills, a lot of talent, but you just got to use your head once in a while.
Well, speaking about a lot of skill and a lot of talent, we're starting to see more of that come from Malik Alcoy, and in the second half in particular, he had a couple of really standout moments. There was the shot which he bent in, but was well saved by Trafford, and then there was the one that could have been a penalty,
I never
Justin.
thought so.
I did think so actually until I saw the replay, and then I joined Al's camp. But yeah, I unfortunately he kind of bumped into the defender's arm, and
Yeah. Well, no, he did make a grabbing motion. He did actually grab him, but it wasn't enough for him to go down.
he
I
was
don't know. I
going
think it,
down.
well,
Yeah,
actually, I think it was enough for him to go down,
that's
but
the
I think he
problem.
was already off balance.
Yeah,
Yeah.
he was already on his way down.
There's a physicality thing there because he weighs about 6 stone and the player he was up against weighed
Already.
about 16 stone. So that was the issue, I think. And he kind of connected with him. And normally those things are shoulder to shoulder there. But because he is kind of quite light, I think it was difficult for him to stay on his feet.
I think he's tougher than you make it. I mean, Lewis Dunk, actually, there's two things on this. Lewis Dunk after the game was saying that Malik fears nobody in training. People talk about his size, but he will take on anyone of any size. And apparently, he goes smashing into Vuskovic in training, which is the only other issue. Is explains why we've got so many injuries if people are smashing into people.
Well, I
That's
think.
fine, but when you're running as fast as he was running, it's you've got no ground to anchor yourself to, so it really does
Yeah.
become body mass against body mass, which he
Well, it
has
was
not
just a check, and he was off
automatically.
balance, and he went, and he
Yeah,
went.
yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
there was contact, but not enough to give a penalty, I
Oh,
don't think.
I cannot believe you just said that. There was contact. Oh.
Well, it's true, Al. It's a part of the game,
Yeah, but no,
but.
yeah, but it's got there was contact, has absolutely nothing to
Well,
do
I'm
with
going to say it
deciding whether
again,
there was a
Al. I'm going to
penalty.
say it again because there was contact, and it was contact with Vuskovic's head from a corner that went into the back. We scored from a corner, Mark.
About time. But yeah, Vuskovic, he showed that promise in the early, well, certainly the friendlies, and he's known for scoring goals. from set pieces when he was playing in Germany. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And bless him, Lewis Dunk, when he goes up, you always think, well, he's a big, like, he heads the ball brilliant. I really thought he would have scored more goals by now. But for some reason, it's never quite happened with Lewis Dunk. But with Vuskovic, I think somehow he's got a bit more of an instinct for where he'll be for the header, or the certainly work with the set piece
Well,
coach.
this was very much a training ground move.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, Lewis was saying afterwards that, we finally we got all of our blocking right and the ball was right and everything else. And actually, it was again, Justin, it was another Maxim de Kuyper corner, who seems to be our best corner taker at the moment, I
He's
would say.
fantastic. Great dead ball. Oh, fantastic player.
Yeah, I'd agree with the Kuipers being depending on which side it is and which way you want to swing it. But yeah, he looks our best corner taker.
Is
But
that De Kuyper
yeah,
Llewellyn?
Vuskovic, it was interesting when he headed the ball, there was a height indifference at the back post for Leeds. And he was towering above about three defenders or three Leeds players, and it just looked amazing. They got nowhere near him, and what I think we're going to find as the season goes on, there has been a clear strategy from the football club to not sign people if they are under about 6 foot 5, and there are more of them to come in. There's Andres, there's Hadja.
Andres is huge.
There are more of these giants they found, and because I was kind of I knew that was something Hertzler is into, and I was looking at the team and thinking, actually, we got Yaoundé, we got Gross, we got
Everyone
few
else.
other players who
Got
are not the
Hinterlutzen.
giants,
Yeah,
and
Hinterlutzen.
we didn't have the giants out yesterday, but I think when we. I've seen on social media and things kind of the team of giants people put out with the average age of not age height of 6 foot 2, and once we get enough of these taller players on the pitch, it's going to get even harder, I think, and we're going to look a bit more like Arsenal in our set pieces.
But
Oh
Mark, I just need to check this with
no.
you, actually. In American sports, when one of these set routines happens, what do they call it?
Well, set piece, I suppose.
No, they call it a play. Anyway, moving swiftly on.
I see what
Can
you
I
did
also just
there.
say that?
It's a
Actually, just
play.
it's a
It's a
play.
play.
Can I also just say, and also, and I alluded to it a few minutes ago. I have absolutely no idea what James Trafford was whinging about. If he was blocked off by anyone, it was about half a dozen Leeds players. Now, the Leeds fans are saying Bosgagli did that, and I've looked at the footage and I'm thinking, well, he was within 6 inches of him, but
It
that's.
was. It was lovely. I mean, the one thing that I picked up on this one was the fact that Vuskovic didn't even have to jump. He just actually just nodded it. It was like
I think is
it was the perfect play. And
well, it's to save
that's
their embarrassment, wasn't it? Because it was so poorly defended.
but yeah, but unlike Pascal Gross, who should have scored the winner shortly after that.
Yeah, it took a sort of big swing at it, didn't
Yeah.
he?
But yeah, indeed.
Yeah, and I think to be honest, it just capped one of those. So it was a shot that was basically sodding typical of the game he'd had.
Indeed. Okay, well, let's move it swiftly on because you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm here with Alan Wares, Mark Brailsford, and Justin Brentnell. And Justin, have you been to a flower shop recently?
No.
If you were, where would you go?
I would go to Flowers Unlimited.
Really? And where would you go, Alan?
I'll go to the flower pot, which serves
That's a
excellent
bakery.
bread. Well, you didn't say what kind of flower.
This is true.
Yeah,
Home
so
fried.
is this where you want me to do my spiel now here,
Yes,
Adrian?
please.
Okay, very well. Okay, well, thank you very much indeed to Dave Costa of Flowers Unlimited, who are located at 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, where you can buy all of your flowers and all your chocolates and champagne and other goodies and treats and sweeties to your loved ones. I was about to say Valentine's Day, but then I'm realizing I'm actually completely off the boil here. I was thinking, well, what it is I'm looking outside and it's dark, and I'm thinking now it's February, and it's not. Valentine's Day is a long way away, so ignore these last 20 seconds. Having said that, that is a good way of actually elongating this section to say Flowers Unlimited is absolutely brilliant. Do pop along there for all your floral needs. And if you tell them you're an Albion season ticket holder, you can get a 20% discount, but make sure you tell them, otherwise you won't get it. So yeah, thanks to Dave Costa of Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, or find them on flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk.
Very awesome. Now, if you're an Albion fan, and if you listen to this, it's highly likely, I would say, very likely.
Yeah, I mean, how many Leeds fans are going to tune into this?
I think. But there is something very special happening in Brighton later this month. And it's a brand new production. It's a play called Stand or Fall the Play. And it's hitting the Theatre Royal from the 23rd of September to the 26th, celebrating 125 years of our beloved club, Mark Brailsford.
Ah, yes. Thank you for that lovely build-up, by the way. I'm enjoying that. It's a play. It's very funny. Because actually, that's what we've encountered lately, because lots of people have been, you know, being handed leaflets and, oh, I've seen it. But no, this is not the documentary. Neither is it the exhibition. So, yes, this is the play, and it's a whole brand new thing. It's in the Theatre Royal, which will be a beautiful, beautiful production, because it's a wonderful building, the lighting, the sound, and everything is amazing about that. But it's a funny play. It's going to be moving, and it's going to be a story of what the fans' journey was like, framing it from between the period of time towards the end of the days at the Goldstone through to qualifying for the Europa League. So yeah. We've got this lovely, you know, the story has moved on, and here we are with this wonderful, you know, yeah, amazing. I don't know about you guys, I still sit in the Amex occasion and go, yeah, oh, wow, this is still amazing to me. I love it.
Yeah, because I mean, let's face it, Mark. This isn't your first rodeo. Certainly isn't your first show at the Theatre Royal. In fact, you've been there a few times with the Treason show, and obviously with Brighton Till I Die. But this is very different to that, isn't it?
It is very much so. So it's really because the story had moved on so much. First, the story of how we ended up doing this play is actually related to Brighton Till I Die, because at first we were asked if we'd do it again. That was written by Paul Hodgson and Dave Blake, and we got together, and there was a feeling that, well, we peaked with this amazing night of doing it at the Theatre on 2011 before the Amex opened, and it was really of its time. And there was I don't know if we'd ever really have recreated, or it would have felt lesser somehow. And I agreed with that, and I thought, that's fine, cool. So we said, oh, well, we'll do anything then. Yeah. But then a suggestion came along, well, why don't you do a new one?
Yeah.
And I went, oh. Okay, so I wrote a new one. So here we are, Stand or Fall, because obviously the play is not the documentary, and it's because that is a whole new chapter in the story of the club.
So yeah. Can I just ask in that case, Mark, I mean, obviously, you know, don't give us any spoilers. I mean, I think it's probably fair to say it's about Brighton and Hove Albion in some way or another. I'm really not sure. I think there might be sort of like the odd reference here and there, but ever since you've been asked to do it, so you know, let's rewind a few months. Can you just give us a flavour of the kind of the, I don't know, the timeline of how you start from its genesis to the point where you're like, you know, what, two, three weeks away from treading the boards? Give us an idea of the timeline of what gets written, who does what happens here, rehearsals, etc., etc. Because I've got no idea how to put a play on, so let us know.
Well, briefly, the genesis
in detail.
Okay, I'll give you. Well, okay.
He wants to know who's playing Alan Wares.
Well, Chris Eubank is very good at
Bluto from Popeye is unavailable.
So basically, the genesis is very much. First of all, I had to think through before I said I'd do it when. You think about the Albion's history, of course, well, a lot of us know that history, but there are hopefully people also going to come and see who don't know the history, who can share the love. But it has to also be a theatrical experience. So, for example, the documentary, we couldn't just stand there on the stage and repeat what the documentary did. So it had to be something completely different. And I remember thinking that the fans' journey is a very important aspect of this, of what it actually meant at the time for the Goldstone to go, what it felt to be going, you know, through the Gillingham years to Withdean, and then obviously to the new stadium. And there's a lot of connections that we make with through family and friends, and the essence of what it means to us as what does home mean to us? I don't know about you guys, but emotionally, the attachment to the Gold Stone was incredibly deep, and it was my life next to my family. It was the most precious thing to me, and it was an incredible loss. And that meaning of home and belonging. And we are all part of it. I'm going to sound very lovely like that, but we are part of this big family that wear blue and white. And I love being part of that. And the journey and the fight to survive and the campaigns, the wonderful fan-led fight to save the club from Archer and Bellotti was a wonderful, galvanizing experience for us all. And I think that's makes our fan base a bit unique compared to a lot of clubs because we are very much bonded by that. And I love honouring that. And I think it's our responsibility, my responsibility certainly, is to keep telling that story to say, look, we came from this. I know you're a bit more of the youngsters. Oh, yeah, we'll keep hearing this. But actually, we're going to tell that story because we lived it. And it's about home. It's about family and belonging and what it means. And I lost my father recently. And it's I used to sit and watch the Albion with my dad, as a lot of us did. And it's also a tribute to him in a way because he took me when I was a kid. His dad took him and all three generations. You know? And I want to honour that as well because I think that's a common experience across any football club, is that your feeling of where you go on every other Saturday. Well, not every other Saturday now, but you go to these games and you see these people you see only at the football. Or you go to the pub with your mates if you got that going, and all your family. You take your kids and you take your mums and dads and granddads, and these are wonderful, wonderful things in our life. And more in a world that's been fractured and disintegrating, we need those connections and we need to feel that love, I think.
Well, football is the modern church, isn't it? It's where we go to worship. It's where
It
we
is.
go to. It's where we gather
It's
and
also,
meet our flock.
but it's also the modern theatre, isn't it?
It is, and the more that AI kicks in with sort of automating everything that we're doing in our lives, the more we're going to crave these more human experiences. And there is nothing more joyous than going out for a lovely evening at a great theatre and being entertained and really royally entertained, because we're not going to be doing anything too pretentious. We're not going to be doing anything too taxing on the art
Well, I'm not coming
of
then.
contemplation. We are doing entertaining, and we've got great jokes, we've got great actors in the cast, and we've got this a load of fun to have, and also a lot of meaning and a lot of emotion, because Stand or Fall, the play, is also part of the history through the Sussex by the Sea lyric of the Sussex Regiment, for example, the
Absolutely,
song.
yeah.
The First World War. The song, when we're all singing, clapping at Sussex by the Sea, they came out, which is brilliant. I
Too
love
fast.
Sussex by the Sea. But that tune, it was also the music that some of those lads on the Somme would have been the last music they ever heard. So we touch on that, and that's Stand or Fall, is the Sussex sort of
So
spirit of the
I
song.
mean, obviously, there's a lot of nostalgia involved in this, but I mean, presumably there is a narrative line throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a full play. I mean, but this is a proper
Is it
narrative
play?
play. It's a play. Did you know it's a play? Because it's not a documentary. But this play would stand up without the football as well. Is that also to go back to your question now? I only wanted to do it if I knew I could make sure it worked as a story in itself, on its own, as a standalone story of these characters that I really want us to believe in and love and really enjoy, wanting to know what's going to go on with this family as their lives are affected by what happened with the Albion, over the troubles, over the campaigns, over the going to different stadia and the Amex and the triumph of qualifying for Europe. All of those amazing things and the great moments that have happened to the Albion, and some not so great, and the characters. I wanted that story to also stand up, and it does. And I really think people will enjoy that a lot because you want to know what's going to go on next.
So tell us about your co-conspirators. Tell it because you mentioned the actors. Tell us about the actors who are going to be sharing the stage with you.
Well, we've got a wonderful actor called Paul Moriarty that some people would recognise from
I was
EastEnders.
about to say, he's the old boy from EastEnders, isn't he?
Well,
You
I
did
can
some
confirm
Shakespeare. Hang on, you did some
Also,
Shakespeare with him, didn't you, Mark?
that's right. The
Yes.
beauty of this cast as well is that, so I've put together some cast members from the Treason Show, which is a lot of people know is my regular show, and then as the artistic director of the Brighton Shakespeare Company, I've directed eight Shakespeares, and I put those together with the Treason Show Company, and Paul came from that side.
Right.
So I've got all of these wonderful actors from both strands of my creative output, of both of my loves, satire and Shakespeare, and then melded it into this wonderful Albion story. So in a way, I stopped, when I was rewriting and rewriting, I'm on draft 6.6 now. I was starting to hear their voices, speak the lines, and that's a wonderful moment when you, as a
Yeah.
writer, when you get to that point, because you've got A plot, B plot, you've got to meld them, and of course, I've got to be absolutely disciplined on accuracy for the story because it's the Albion's history.
Okay, so you've got Paul Moriarty. Who else can we look forward to? Give
Sarah
us a shout
Mann,
out to your fellow actors.
Sarah Mann is wonderful. She's got her own theatre company, and when I started off the Brighton Shakespeare Company, she was one of my associate directors, and she's a fantastic person I've known for like a quarter of a century. Always admired her work, so I'm very privileged and honoured that she wants to keep working with me. It's a lovely thing to have. Andrew Crouch, some of people will remember him, but from both Shakespeare and the Treason Show, he's been regulars in both, and was wonderful as Brutus in Julius Caesar at both. When I directed it there. And we've got Rebecca Blanchard, who's this force of nature who's just amazing playing Babs. We've got James Petherick, who's just hilarious. He's just adorable. And you just love watching this guy on stage. Lily Sitzia, who's going to be playing a few parts as well. In fact, she's playing Bellotti to my Bill Archer.
And are they all Brighton fans?
No.
Okay, well, let's
But
leave that at
nearly
that.
all of them are.
Okay,
I did.
and
I
I
did
think.
actually. I did find this out though, because I was doing some digging into this earlier. And obviously,
Feel stalked here,
Paul
Mark. Feel
Moriarty came
stalked.
up, and I just had a quick look at his IMDb, and like you'll be delighted now to know that he starred opposite Jill Gascoigne in The Gentle Touch.
Good grief. Yeah, I mean, I know who he is. I recognize his name. So, and also then there's people who are equally important. Who's behind the scenes for you, Mark?
Well, I've got my wonderful stage manager, Katie Matthews, and we've been ably supported by the wonderfully flamboyant Ian Hart, who's doing a fantastic job of supporting the show, certainly getting it to the stage, helping us finance it. And we've got an army of people behind it doing marketing publicity. Nikki Sweetland, who used to work for the Albion and also has done West End Theatre, she's doing the marketing publicity. We've got the two ASMs have got Sean Chapman, who's this amazing designer who I'm using for this show again because he did all those Shakespeare plays, who's just a legend. I mean, he used to run nightclubs in Brighton and used to be one of the most famous Marilyn Monroe impersonators in the country. And what he doesn't know about making wigs, he can't write, which I need more and more these days. And and he's a lovely, lovely designer and talented man to have on board. We've got. Oh, there's an army basically. There's of ASMs, flying teams, marketing,
Yeah, I
everyone.
mean, we saw the flying teams in and around all the pubs and the station. They were everywhere. It was on Saturday before the game,
So just as
and
a yeah,
you
I
know, and
also
it was.
should mention, by the way, there is a script consultant who I consult, and his name is Paul
Paul
Hodgson,
Hodgson.
who wrote Right Until I Die. So we're carrying on a tradition there as well, because what Paul doesn't know about football plays can't
Yeah.
be written.
You
Fair
see,
enough.
you have read my script, because that was my next question. Is Paul Hodgson involved?
Here's my next question then in that case. So here we are. We're recording this on the 7th of September, so that's 22 days to curtain up. I think no, hang on. 16 days to curtain up. My maths is just completely out the window. 16 days to curtain up. So when you're putting together something brand new like this, with 16 days to go, where are you at? I mean, do you have lots of rewrites? Are you doing rehearsals? Are you what where are you at?
I've got this very nice, soft, bouncy room, which I go into and cry.
Ah. It's called the
No,
Albion Roar.
yes. So basically, the rewrites have been taking. I've been writing this since the beginning of the year. I started the story ideas at the end of last year, and that I had to satisfy myself. I thought I could pull this off first before I said
Yeah.
I'd go for it. Then we struggled to get it made because we have to find finance, and we're still, very sort of struggling with budgets because we are trying to keep that budget down. But we did finally finance it. And then I've been writing this play now since January. As I might have mentioned, draft 6.6 at the moment, but each draft probably went through about four or five different drafts each time on each draft. And then we arrive at a locked script, as we call it. We lock the script just before we start rehearsals, and then we're production script ready. And then in rehearsals again, it goes up for a whole other process because you suddenly go, well, actually, that scene should move there. We're going to move that scene now. I did that today. I moved the scene. And we tighten the language. We sort out a few extraneous moments that just don't quite hit. And then we do bits of tweaks and rewrites as we go through rehearsal every single day. And it's a hell of a process, and it's full on, and
Yeah.
it's exhausting.
So are you actually
It's so
rehearsing
much
every
fun.
day at the moment?
I am, yeah. And the cast are working their, you know what's off, and they're brilliant. And we are laughing so much in rehearsal. We're having such a great time as well, to be fair. And also, yeah, moments as well, where we're finding moments, you know. And we've had moments in the read-through where there were a few tears as well, which was quite sweet. So it's been incredibly full on, I would
Sounds
say.
quite cathartic for you as well,
Yeah.
especially as you said, you know, your personal bereavement this summer.
Well, I'm trying to push that aside a bit so that I can focus, because every now and again it hits you, as some of you who've been through loss will know. And I think I'm saving my emotions up till after the run, because
Fair
I really
enough.
hope my dad could see this, and he sadly won't now, obviously. And
Yeah.
so it's my tribute to him as well. So
Sure.
I'm just pushing through, trying not to think too much about other things
Okay,
now,
and
to pay tribute.
is it for all ages? Will there be children present, or is
Yeah,
it?
parental guidance is what we're saying. So yes, of course you can bring kids, and there is a junior rate as well. We PG 12 upwards is what we've suggested, but it's not a hard fast. It must be 12. You can bring 10 year
Okay.
olds if you need, but
And
we are saying yes.
where can we get the tickets from, Mark? Where are they?
ATG. Let me just check that
Hang on,
one.
I've actually
It's
called up the.
from the ATG ticket office online, or from the directly from the
Right,
Theatre
I'm just going
Royal.
to quickly
Exactly.
read out the
ATG
URL here.
tickets.
I could tell you what the address is. ATGtickets.com/Brighton.
Okay, I've got it here. ATGtickets.com/show/StandOrFallThePlay/Theatre Royal
This is a
Brighton. But
play.
yours is a shorter one because it is a
Yeah.
play. What I
You
am
will
going to
find me
do,
through
what I am
that.
going to do is I'm going to create a QR code if you haven't already and actually stick it on our socials for people
Ooh.
to make it easier for people to do that.
That is a great idea.
Yeah, no problem. So,
Okay,
yes.
so we'll touch on it briefly before, but we are running out of time. So let's just quickly have a look at where we're at going into the game this weekend. Obviously, five games in, if you include the European ones just in. And obviously, we've got the European fixtures that they've been released now, so we know where and when we're playing, which is exciting. Obviously, that doesn't start until after the international break. So hopefully, we'll have some of our walking wounded back.
Yeah, it's been a very, very unfortunate start to the season in terms of injuries. And as we alluded to earlier, the starting lineup for Leeds would have been vastly improved with Mitoma, Minteh on the wing, Jorginho or Hinshelwood at number 10, and Tismas playing number 9. Better things are to come for us, but we do need those players back.
And then, of
Yeah, I
course,
think
there's the
it's in
great
us
un
is.
there's, sorry, there's also the great unknowns of those that haven't started yet and those that haven't played yet. I mean, it's interesting. Mark alluded to him earlier, but what's your take on Yokoi that we've seen so far?
I think he is the perfect. So.
Justin, you keep
You
freezing
will. We will get
me.
players loaned. Sorry, we'll get players loaned out for various time periods, and there will be on these loans. But actually, it's more about the experience than how well they are doing for the team they're on loan to. And Yao Kouye has come out unbelievably well after his loans. If you watched him play for Swansea last year, you might have a different view.
Because
Because he didn't get that much game time, he wasn't doing what Kozier Dubry was doing, which was kind of man of the match in a lot of games. And he's there for the experience. He's there to become a professional footballer. And I think there were a lot of people who were quite surprised, and I'll include myself in that, when he came in to the Chelsea match and pretty much got man of the match for the album, which he seemed to have repeated against Leeds as well.
But I mean, if you rewind back a year, or probably more than a year actually now, but when he first came over here, I was really, really excited about him. I actually thought he was going to be the standout player last season. I thought he was going to be given an opportunity. Obviously, he played a few games in pre-season last year, as he did this year. But when he came to us originally, obviously still very young, still very raw, but he was already starring in the Champions League for Sturm Graz. He was getting man of the match awards. He was running the game. He's got that kind of, for a small guy, he's got that energy. I think actually he does get around and he can put himself about. And I did a couple of preview shows last season, and they asked who's the player to look out for, and I actually said Yao Kuai last season, but then obviously I was disappointed to see that he went out on loan. So to have him here and actually being given an opportunity now, once the new players are bedded in and fit, I don't know whether he's actually going to be there. I mean, Andre is certainly a player that looks like he's going to be very, very exciting. Looking at socials, Real Madrid fans are absolutely spitting feathers that they haven't actually brought him back, because they thought he was going to be a big star for them. And they did actually have some sort of like buyback thing, I believe, which they've now lost.
I think the thing about
That's
your
why
go
you
on.
do the deal half an hour before the window ends.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Yeo Kois is certainly watching him for the Chelsea game. I didn't see so much for the Villa game, but certainly watching him for the Chelsea game and for the Leeds game. What was apparent was certainly for the Chelsea game, he started out wide. In fact, he played most of his time out there out wide. But for the Leeds game, he started more centrally, and I didn't think he was quite as effective. That's not to say he's an out-and-out winger. He's not. But I think he's kind of like a wide player in the way that Gomez is. Gomez isn't an out-and-out winger. I just think that when those two are out wide, I think just Yao Kuai just has that little bit more. I mean, it's you can argue the quality, because let's face it, with Gomez, his shooting is either wild or off the scale wonderful and nowhere in between. But I think Yao Kuai has got a bit more of a football brain. I think there's a bit too much sort of head down, kick, run about Gomez, and too many times his second touch is a tackle. But with Yao Kuai, there's a bit more nous about him, even at that young age, while
Isn't
he's out
Gomez out of
wide.
position though? Are there a lot of that's to do with he's not really naturally a right-sided player in that sense? He's a central midfielder.
Well, there's that, but I mean, the point is that when Yao Kuai, and it's only been two games, when he's looked his best, it's when he's wide left. That's not to say he's a touchline hugger like Minteh or Matoma are. It's just, and this is where Fabian Hertzler has options. Once he's got the rest of his squad back, he'll have options that he can have wide players. I mean, I don't think it'd be wide players and wingers. It'd be wide players or wingers. And the point is when he uses, the 16 out of his 20 in any given match day squad, he'll use them for the most part intelligently. And, there's not that many, apart from the defenders, there's not that many players that play for 90 minutes. And when you're supposed to be one of the more progressive, attacking, creative players, then 90 minutes is actually a big ask.
Well, a lot of these players will be getting opportunities, particularly with the European games coming up as well. I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, is Yao Kuai's not in the.
He's not registered in the squad for the Leeds
Yeah,
game.
something about too
That
many
seems to be,
loans.
yeah. Also, there's a lot of homegrown player quotas as well. They've got
Right.
to sort of sit right with and the local players. So they've got to think about that.
So, I mean, that would therefore say to me he's more likely to be, quote, rested when it comes to that. He's more likely to play in the Premier League if he can't play in Europe.
Okay, but Mark, I mean, obviously, Yao Kuai's been with us for a while. But what are the new signings have really excited you so far? I know we haven't seen them. Which ones do you think will be without seeing them play.
Well, I mean,
Get
obviously,
you off your seat.
without seeing them, you're right. But yeah, I mean, obviously, when you hear the words "Baby Rodri" talked about, you go, "Hello, that's going to be interesting." And the fact that Real Madrid did mess up completely there, and the Real Madrid fans are not happy. That's a good sign that we're doing that. Aziz, I know he's just arrived from Millwall, he's injured, but he could be really interesting because he was really ambitious to join Brighton. That's good.
And he's already got a great song as well.
Well, which one?
It's Aziz is good. Aziz is
Aziz is
good.
good,
Tell me
brilliant. Start
Aziz
for a
is
bit of shaming in there, brilliant. But of course, you've also got to remember the players coming back. Simas, of course, hopefully comes back. And I was really sad for him when he got injured because he was on his way to hopefully put himself through the
I
team.
think although
No,
obviously we
because
paid I mean obviously the transfer fees don't really come into this, Justin, do they? But I think actually Simas was the one that the club were probably going to give more games to last season in terms of as a out and out number nine. That would have rested Danny Welbeck a bit more, I think, but it didn't quite work out that way.
Oh, that was strategy, and I remember last season where Tismas was playing a bit part, kind of the odd substitution
I do love
appearance,
your
and then he
verbal
started,
typos.
and he looked like a proper number nine, and then scored a goal, and then was out for 10 months or something after that. So it's unfortunate. What I would like to point out, going back to Yao Cuiar on loan is our signing of Mateus Orozco, which was a 3.5 million signing out of Colombia, an 18-year-old. If you get a chance to see highlights of his debut for Castellón, the second tier team signed up to Jamestown Analytics in Spain, it's very, very impressive. I'm not going to tell everyone to believe it looks like an 18-year-old Caicedo, but to me, he does.
Okay, so Mark, so we are just about to run out of time. So quickly, just remind us what a play is.
It's Stand or Fall, the play, and it's not the documentary. It's 23rd of September to the 26th at the Theatre
And
Royal.
how much and where can you get the tickets from?
You can get your tickets from atgtickets.com/Brighton. That's a Theatre Royal. You can just pop into the box office and buy them there. There's all sorts of prices. And you've got different price bands. You can sit in cheap seats or you can sit in the stalls.
Can I make one request, Mark? Change the name of it to Stand or Fall the Play, not the documentary.
Oh, not more artwork. God knows
More
what they print
artwork.
the poster.
Or a banner goes
Well, you see.
across as an opening thing. This is
It,
not the documentary.
well, you see, this is why I said that we're wobbly at the start, because we can't stand, or we're either standing or we're falling. We're wobbly.
Hey.
But
Right. Outro,
you
please,
see.
AD.
But on that note, that is all we have time for. So don't forget to get your tickets for Stand or Fall to Play at the Theatre Royal. But thank you to Mark Brassel. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Justin Brentnell. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week.
philosophies where only showbiz loses.